Hey there, it's Zach. And for today's mini episode, and we're going to use the term mini lightly on this one because this one's going to be pretty long, I would like to share with you the 100% human reading of my latest Substack essay, The Introvert's Pocket Guide to Building Genuine Connections in a Disconnected World. If you enjoyed this essay and you don't want to miss my future essays, actionable insights, and soapbox rants about navigating the next act of work and life on our terms, not the robots, make sure to subscribe at zacharnold.com/substack. That is Zach, Z-A-C-K, zacharnold.com/substack. If we create networks with the sole intention of getting something, we won't succeed. True success comes from investing in meaningful relationships. The following is a quote from New York Times bestselling author of the book Give and Take, Adam Grant. Walking barefoot and blindfolded across a minefield of Legos, lathering your body head to toe in olive oil and sliding down a life-size cheese grater, attempting to rob Kevin McAllister's home on Christmas Eve. This is just the short list of activities that any self-respecting introvert like me might choose over networking. Because frankly, I will take any form of torture before having to work the room. Dear Lord, that I used to hate networking. And depending on the context, to be honest, I still kind of do. Given the choice between small talk or shoving hot needles underneath my fingernails, well, I can always get a manicure afterwards. But the more that I put myself out there, the more I realized that it wasn't networking that I hated, but instead, loud noises in crowded spaces. Monotonous small talk that always begins with, "So, what do you do?" Dear Lord, shoot me in the face. Or looking like an idiot interjecting myself in other people's conversations where I clearly didn't belong. Or feeling like a used car salesman collecting business cards so I can follow up with my potential leads. Or the desperate need for a hot shower after spending all night selling the worst version of myself. And then needing days to recover before I had the energy to sell my soul all over again. A missed opportunity at my sixth grade end of year formal perfectly sums up practically every in-person networking experience that I have ever attended. Well, that is before learning how to network. Just picture the stereotypical middle school dance. The girl standing against one wall, the guy standing against the other. A glance here, a gesture there. But nobody is ready to make the first move. What feels like days passes before one courageous, but let's be honest, still very awkward soul, meanders to the middle of the dance floor, and then another, and then another. And then before you know it, everyone is dancing, talking, and laughing without a care in the world. Except me. Now picture 12-year-old me sitting in the corner all by myself. Yeah, right. Like I'm going to go out there and look like a fool. You see, I wasn't quote-unquote ready to dance yet because I didn't know enough moves, or maybe the song wasn't perfect yet, or the timing wasn't right, or that girl that I was crushing on, she might think that I'm going to look stupid. But then my song started to play, Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. And yes, I am a zennial child of the 80s. But I still didn't get up because I still wasn't ready. So here's where the story gets interesting. My dad spots me and he sits me down to have a chat. Now, side note, my father was also the principal of my school, but this is another topic for another essay and another session with my therapist. My dad asked me why I wasn't dancing, especially because the girl that I liked was out there and he knew it was my favorite song. I told him, I'm just waiting for the right time. And that is when he hit me with a truth bomb. You will never be ready. The timing will never be right. Just get out there. And so I did. And I danced like an idiot to Def Leppard. And it's one of the fondest memories of middle school that I'll ever have. And it's the first thing that I think of anytime I hear that song. Now, rinse, lather, and repeat the story for the next two decades of my life. I avoided every possible in-person networking opportunity that I could, and the ones that I did attend, I took it upon myself to make sure that the back corner of the far end of the room was kept warm. Because no matter who I might want to connect with, I was never ready, and the timing was never right. Now, what I ultimately despised about networking events was the notion that I had to fake it, inauthentically masquerading myself as the Wolf of Wall Street peddling 100 pounds of bullshit until I could actually make it. But the harsh reality for an awkwardly introverted creative weirdo like me with zero connections who wanted to make it in a highly competitive industry was clear. Being awesome at what you do is only half the battle. The other half is making sure that the right people know that you're awesome. In my podcast interview with Troy Takaki, who is the most well-connected person in Hollywood that I am all but sure you've never heard of, he said, "You don't network to get jobs. You network to meet people, and people get you jobs." While I wholeheartedly endorse Troy's sentiment, and I've shared this quote and our podcast together for years, I would add that networking can also be about far more than meeting people for the sake of them helping you get jobs or clients. Having built a strong support network across three completely different industries over my 25-year career, what I've discovered is that networking doesn't have to be about schmoozing, working the room, taking from whomever you can convince to give, or selling your soul for your next paycheck. If you are willing to give first and prioritize building genuine relationships instead of collecting more connections, networking can be an enjoyable, rewarding, and even energizing experience. Yes, even for awkward introverts like us. You see, we introverts already possess all of the raw materials to become amazing at networking. It's not that we crave solitude so much as seeking engaging conversations with interesting people who inspire us in rooms where we can actually hear each other speak. It's not that we're shy so much as waiting patiently for the right kinds of people to share our ideas with who won't immediately judge us. It's not that we're awkward so much as carefully choosing the right moment to bring value to a conversation where people are actually willing to listen instead of just waiting for their turn to speak. It's not that we hate the game of networking. It's that we prefer a slow game of chess to a superficial version of speed checkers, or even worse, go fish. And it's not that we hate networking for the sake of getting more work or clients so much as wanting to build genuine relationships so that we can build a better life. Therefore, to expand upon Troy's thoughts, I'd like to offer the following perspective. You don't just network to get jobs, you network to find your people, and your people help shape who you become. Networking is about so much more than just gathering connections in search of your next gig, client, or big contract. And networking is about even more than building a successful career or business. According to one of the most extensive scientific studies on human longevity and happiness conducted at Harvard University, the number one factor that determines your level of happiness is the quality of your relationships. So, with a little patience, a little perseverance, and a clear networking strategy, your introversion is no longer a liability, but can instead become your greatest asset. And here's the best part. You can build your dream network from the comfort of your laptop and in your pajamas. Come join me. But before we dive deep into the how, and yeah, by the way, this essay goes deep, we should first address the elephant in the room. Why the hell should you listen to me? Just to be clear, you are about to take networking advice from the founder and acting president of Introverts Anonymous. When people see me at in-person networking events, it's like a Bigfoot sighting. Now listen, I am definitely not a people person. However, I do very much consider myself a person person. Yet despite my extremely introverted temperament, and despite being raised in a Wisconsin dairy farming community of 412 people and starting with 0.0 connections, I have built my entire creative career on the quality of my outreach and the genuine relationships that those connections have become. Case in point, the week before college graduation, I sent out one cold email with one resume attached. It led to one job interview, and this led to 3 years of full-time work as a trailer assistant editor and then an editor. I edited my first feature film at 25, a job that was referred to me through my network. It was acquired a year later by Fox Searchlight for $4.75 million. Then, of the next six feature films that I edited, three came from warming up my network, two came from cold outreach, and one literally fell in my lap because of a referral from my mentor, whom I connected with via cold outreach. My first job editing television was the number one show on cable TV at the time, Burn Notice, and I got the interview via a referral from a mentor, whom I connected with, you guessed it, via cold outreach. That one email ended up yielding 4 seasons and 25 episodes of work. From there, my next 4 jobs, 8 seasons of work, all came from a combination of referrals and warming up my existing network. And then I landed my lifelong dream job, editing and associate producing Cobra Kai via cold outreach that I sent to a former colleague that I hadn't worked with in years, and that one email landed 5 seasons of work. So to quickly do the math, that is 6 cold outreach emails, 10 referrals from advocates, and 20 years of gainful employment. And by the way, this is in just one industry, because at the age of 38, I brilliantly decided that I wanted to become, yeah, that's right, an American Ninja Warrior. I had 0 connections and 0 experience. And if I was going to not only learn the sport, but also break into this community and get on the show, I needed mentors and I needed connections. 3 years later, I was called by the casting department to compete on the show twice, simply because my ninja trainer put in a good word. It also helped that my audition reel was kind of badass. And the reason that my ninja trainer was willing to take a chance on me is because of the other trainer that I just happened to be working with for the last 3 years. So who are my trainers, you might ask? Well, 1, American Ninja Warrior global superstar Jesse Graff, and none other than the Tony Horton, the creator of P90X, the most successful fitness program in history. Once again, 2 cold outreach emails became 2 legendary trainers, mentors, and now friends. Now, in my 10 plus years of hosting the Zach Arnold podcast, I'm going to be honest, I have yet to break through to that coveted A-list level, garnering millions of downloads per episode, just like Tim Ferriss or Stephen Bartlett, host of The Diary of a CEO. Yet I have a lot of similar guests on my little show, such as New York Times bestselling authors, James Clear, Oliver Berkman, Cal Newport, Greg McKeown, Ramit Sethi, Gretchen Rubin, Annie Duke, and the 1 TED Talk of 2025, Amy McNee, just to name a very small few. I've also talked to countless Oscar and Emmy winners, the former head of Amazon Movies, Olympic medalists, and so many, many more. So, how did I build my roster of hundreds of podcast experts over the years? Huh, you guessed it, cold outreach. Well, to be honest, it was cold outreach and some badass introductions from an advocate, that is. You see, now that I am pivoting my career away from Hollywood and into the nonfiction space as both an aspiring author and a public speaker, I now have a new mentor that is just an email away, who helps me fill knowledge gaps, who forces me to rethink my assumptions, and who sometimes tells me my book ideas need more thoughts, and who has also facilitated countless introductions to people that I might otherwise struggle to connect with. And my author mentor? Adam Grant. So hold on a second. How in the hell did New York Times bestselling author Adam Grant become my mentor? Oh, you got it again. Cold outreach. I have built my entire career across 3 completely separate industries, not by schmoozing, not by working the room, not by selling myself, and not by taking the shotgun approach, spraying and praying my resume across cyberspace in hopes that someone might take a chance on me. I have instead built my entire creative career by strategically reaching out to the right people that I needed in my network at every stage of my journey, who were excited to hear from me and eager to help. And why were they so eager to help little old me? Because I always give more than I take, or at the very least, I hope that is the case. I have built my entire career using 1 single outreach formula, VSA, value, story, ask. But before we get into the nuances of how to approach the right people and why, we first need to make sure that you are reaching out to the right people in the first place. So let's talk about who to target and where to find them. The following is the most widely cited quote about the importance of building the right network and surrounding yourself with the right people. You are the average of the 5 people that you surround yourself with the most, from none other than Jim Rohn. In today's digital age, where our real lives are now primarily online and we fill the remaining gaps in the analog world, I still believe this general sentiment to be true, but now I believe that we become the average of the most frequent content that we consume with our eyeballs and the voices that we allow into our earbuds. Given how easily we can get sucked into the dark abyss of snake oil influencers and enragement bait, One would think that the best option is just to disconnect altogether, especially the highly sensitive introverts like us who just can't. When approached with the right rules, boundaries, and guardrails, however, the digital world opens a vast ocean of possibilities for us introverts who absolutely detest the in-person networking experience. But just saying, well, I'll network online instead, that's only going to lead to infinitely more overwhelm, more rejection, and more despair unless you have a strategy. No different than how you might approach saving for retirement by creating a diverse portfolio of investments, when building your network, you need a diverse portfolio of relationships far beyond the people that you can ping when you're just looking for the next gig or the next client. Regardless of your industry or your goals, your portfolio should have a healthy assortment of relationships across all five of the following levels. Here are the five levels of your network: peers, experts, mentors, advocates, and gatekeepers. So let's start with peers. Your peers may include your friends, your colleagues, former classmates, those in groups who share the same passions or unique interests, or other connections that you have collected over the years. But there's most likely a vast untapped network of peers that you haven't even considered yet. Your peers can be defined as anyone that shares the same goals as you or those who share the same obstacles. In short, you are in similar journeys, walking similar paths in a given context or circumstance. The key with peers is understanding the context of your relationship, not just your job title or your standing in the world. For example, you most likely would never consider Steven Spielberg to be a peer of yours. However, what if you and Stevie, as you like to call him, because you're neighbors, what if the two of you shared a property line? Yeah, I get it. We're living in fantasy land. Stick with me for a second. So now imagine if a giant tree fell down and it crushed the shared fence that separates your properties. In this context, well, you and Steven Spielberg, you share a common goal and a common obstacle. You need to get rid of the fallen tree and you need to fix the fence. So in this specific context, you and Steven Spielberg, you are peers. So when do you need peers? Well, when you need help troubleshooting, when you need accountability, when you're learning new things and you want to compare notes, when you need support from somebody who gets it and also gets you, and when you just need a friend. So where can you find your peers? Well, this is where in-person networking events, panels, and conferences are amazing networking opportunities, but again, only to connect with your peers. Other places you can find your peers include in-person activities like classes, sports, recreation, online groups and forums, social media, but I would ask you to proceed with caution, and shameless self-promotion, online classes and communities just like the Arnold Academy for Creatives. Now, having a strong peer network is vital to not only achieving your goals and work, but also building a more fulfilling life. But a strong peer network alone is only going to get you so far. You are going to need experts. The term expert is often associated with gurus or masters of their craft, those who know it all and have achieved it all. Across social media and YouTube, there is an endless supply of experts proclaiming that they know everything. But I promise you, they're all full of shit. If you ask anybody who has actually achieved something meaningful by developing a high level of competence and expertise, they will be the first to tell you that they have so much more to learn. And for more on this phenomenon, see this thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Rather than building your network of the world's foremost experts in your given field, what if instead you approached those who are just a step or two ahead of you on the exact same path? So in this case, your quote-unquote experts can be defined as anyone doing now what you hope to be doing next, those who have overcome the obstacles that you are currently struggling with, or those who possess the knowledge and the wisdom that you seek. Nobody would characterize an entry-level intern right out of college as an expert. However, if your goal is getting the same internship and your obstacle is having no idea how to get your foot in that door, this intern is literally the world's expert on your current problems. So, when do you need experts? Well, when you are unsure of your path, when you are unsure what skills to learn, when you are unsure which knowledge to acquire, and just as importantly, which knowledge to avoid. When you need an objective perspective on your current work, or when you need an outside opinion on an upcoming opportunity. And where can you find your experts? Well, podcasts and books are great for this, as are online communities, again, shameless self-promotion, like the Arnold Academy for Creatives. Another great place to find experts, social media. But once again, please proceed with immense caution here. LinkedIn is another great place, as are industry conferences and panels. Now, having a variety of experts in your network is absolutely vital to achieving your goals. But at some point, you're going to need more than somebody that you can just take out to coffee and pick their brain. Side note, never reach out to somebody cold and ask them out to coffee so you can pick their brain. You're going to have to trust me on this one. So next, we've come to mentors. When you have reached the point where asking a few questions of your experts and filling knowledge gaps just isn't enough to get you to the promised land, you're going to need a mentor or two. Your mentors can be defined as experienced and trusted individuals who are invested in your journey and provide you ongoing guidance along the way. Now, like your experts, mentors have already achieved what you want to achieve next, but they can also empathize with your journey because they've been there before. So whether you're Luke seeking his Obi-Wan or Daniel in desperate need of his Mr. Miyagi, the mentors that you surround yourself with will determine where your career goes and who you become along the way. So when might you need a mentor or two? Well, when you're seeking regular guidance and check-ins, when you need somebody to point out your blind spots, when you need somebody who can challenge you when you're stuck, when you need more accountability than just your peers can provide, and when you're facing difficult decisions and you need an outside perspective from somebody who has been there. And where can you find your mentors? Well, in all of the same places that you find your experts. But here's the catch. You can't just find a mentor. You must earn a mentor. And the only way to do so is by reaching out to somebody as your expert first, asking good and thoughtful questions, taking action, and demonstrating to the right person that you are worth investing in over time. But even a strong network of mentors is not going to be enough to open doors that you never could otherwise. At some point, you're going to need an advocate. So now let's talk about advocates. If you aspire to do more in your work and your life than just making the donuts, at some point, you're going to need a trusted advocate who vouches for you when nobody else is willing to take a chance on you. Your advocates can be defined as the trusted advisors who see your potential and are willing to open doors that you could never enter otherwise. You cannot send a stranger cold outreach, asking them for an introduction or a referral until you've earned that gesture. I cannot tell you how many people have asked me to refer them for a job when I barely know them and I have never worked with them before. Your advocates are putting themselves on the line when they advocate for you, and they're only going to be willing to do so when they have the confidence that you have the skills, the experience, the right character, and that you can provide value to the people they're going to connect you with. So given that, when do you need advocates? Well, when you can't get in the door otherwise, when your work doesn't speak for itself yet, when you want to connect with a hard-to-reach gatekeeper, when you need somebody to vouch for your potential, and when you need an edge competing with people that are more experienced than you. And where can you find your advocates? Well, like mentors, advocates cannot be found. They must be earned. Having a strong network of advocates will most likely be the difference between building the career or the business that you desire versus stringing together gigs that just pay the bills. But at some point, you're just going to have to go for it and connect directly with the gatekeepers. The time will inevitably come when you must connect with somebody who is ultimately going to decide your fate. Will you be brought into the fold or left out in the cold? The person making that decision, they are your gatekeeper. Depending on your industry or business, your gatekeepers can be defined as either the people hiring you or the clients and customers buying your product or service. These are the decision makers who control the access to the opportunities and the revenue that you seek. Now, you might assume that like mentors or advocates, gatekeepers must also be earned. However, on the contrary, if you are confident that you are the best fit for the opportunities that you seek and that you are the best solution to their problems, I am all for reaching out cold directly to your gatekeepers. Because if you know that you can make their lives easier, why wouldn't you? So, when do you need gatekeepers? Well, when you need opportunities, when you need clients and customers, and when you need money. So where can you find your gatekeepers? Well, there's an endless list of where you can find them. But to start with, LinkedIn, jobs boards, industry panels and conferences, trade publication announcements, podcast interviews, social media, talent agencies, management companies, professional associations and guilds, curated communities and networks like Shameless Self-Promotion, the Arnold Academy for Creatives, and of course, your existing network. Now, for most people, networking is a transactional means leading to the end of getting work. It is all about selling themselves. Those feelings of shame and disgust, that's why you need a hot shower after networking events. But if you stop trying to optimize your number of connections and you instead approach building your network with a mindset of expanding a diverse portfolio of relationships, the people that you connect with can open doors you never imagined possible. That is, of course, if you don't freaking blow it. So let's talk about how not to approach your ideal connections. Having received thousands of mostly shitty outreach emails in my career, I've got a pretty good sense of what works and what doesn't. In fact, I collect bad outreach like baseball cards. Before sharing some of my favorites in my collection and breaking down why most approaches fail, it's imperative that you first step into the mind of the very busy person you intend to connect with, a process that I like to call crawling into the brain of your recipients. Now, just take a moment to imagine the ideal person that you hope to connect with and their daily work environment. Imagine the amount of requests that are put upon them for their time and their expertise. Now imagine them being so busy that your message finds them eating lunch at their desk, perhaps. Now imagine their email inbox. While it may seem nearly impossible to compete for a busy person's valuable attention, given how little they actually have available for the next stranger like you who lands in their inbox, it is possible to stand out amongst the noise if you give first and provide value to this person. But because quote-unquote providing value is such an elusive and overly used cliche nowadays, and because drafting genuine outreach can be a tedious and time-consuming ordeal, well, most people opt for the easy route instead. So I want to talk a little bit more about the five most common mistakes that I see people making with their outreach. Mistake number one, making it all about you. It is a common mistake to assume that your best and only approach is to sell yourself and include every relevant piece of information that is going to set you apart from your competitors. And of course, don't forget to attach your resume and a link to your website. But you have lost the game immediately if you are making your first message all about you. From your perspective, well, you might be thinking, this is my one shot. So you must share all of your credits, all of your experience, your education. Of course, it is absolutely imperative that you impress them with your uncanny ability to interpret the deeper meaning of their creative choices, such that it reads like a bro film school thesis. Keep in mind, a busy person has no problem ignoring you. It is not their responsibility to respond to your message. It is your responsibility to earn their response. Mistake number two, your message isn't personal and it reads like a template, or even worse, it's a group message. I know how tempting it is to be as efficient as possible with the limited amount of time that you have to network. We all love our macro keyboard commands that get us from 8 keystrokes to 2, but outreach messages are not the place to focus on efficiency, and they are definitely not the place to be using the bots. Sending 500 generic messages with a 1% response rate, that's going to get you 5 responses. And they're going to be tepid at best. But what if instead you sent just 10 highly personalized, thoughtful, and handcrafted messages to the right people, and you got a 70% response rate? Well, that would get you 7 responses, all of which have the potential to lead to a genuine relationship. Stop hunting with a shotgun and start hunting with a sniper rifle. Now, here's an example of a common template message that I've received from many acquaintances, colleagues, and even strangers. Hey there, checking in. Happy New Year. Congrats on all the success with your show. Can't wait to watch the next season. Loving your podcast. So I just finished working on insert name of project here, so I'm back to finding my next show. Attached is my resume if you hear of anything. Hey, let me know if you're available for coffee. Would love to catch up. All the best, person. First of all, how do I know that this is a template email? Because they used the wrong freaking name. Yes, maybe they took the time to personalize the first sentence, but anybody with Google or IMDb can find out in 2 minutes or less what it is that I've been working on. Now, for context, this was actually an acquaintance that I know personally, whom I have met at several past networking events. And you know what? He's a nice guy. I want him to succeed. but we have never worked together, so I don't feel comfortable blankly forwarding his resume for a job if I don't know more about his job performance. And furthermore, you know when the only time is when I hear from this person? When he's unemployed. Ugh. Had he instead, I don't know, taken the time to watch an episode or two of my work, or maybe listened to a recent episode of my podcast, maybe he wanted to comment on something that inspired him, guess what? 100% I would have responded. But in this case, it's tough to make the time for coffee or lunch when this technically wasn't even written for me. Now, this is even worse. These are the most egregious offenders. This is an example of the group emails that I get all the time. Editor available. Two undisclosed recipients. Hello, everyone. I thought I'd reach out to let you all know that I am available and looking if anybody hears of shows or features that need somebody to cut. Hey, if you hear of anything, feel free to hit me up or direct them to my website. Thanks for your consideration. P.S. Resume attached. Oy. So if I don't know this person, or even if maybe I've met them casually, but I haven't worked with them before, once again, why in the world would I refer them? Advocating for somebody, that's going to put my reputation on the line. But even worse, if I do know this person and I've worked with them in the past, and P.S., by the way, that was the case with this message, why in the world did they not take the effort to reach out to me personally? Once again, ugh. Mistake number three, you get too personal and you send your life story. All right. I realized that I just told you not to send a template and instead take the time to craft a personal message. But for the love of all that is holy, do not send your life story. At best, you have 2 minutes or less to get this person's attention and have them respond before they are already onto all of their other messages and urgent matters in their life. Your story, that's going to have to wait for another conversation. Now, I would read for you the example that I have in my guide here in this PDF in front of me. For the love of all that is holy, once again, it would take me forever to read it. So you're just going to have to take my word for it, or better yet, download my guide. Now, yes, this person's heart was in the right place, and they have clearly done their homework on me, but alas, because the email is incredibly long, detailed, and personal, and because crafting an equally thoughtful response would take me hours, this message will continue to sit on my pile of messages that deserve a response, but just don't fit on my calendar. Moving on to mistake number four, you haven't made it abundantly clear how this person can help you, or frankly, why they should at all. I cannot tell you how many times I've been told by somebody that is desperately struggling, ugh, nobody wants to help me. If there's one thing you take away from this entire guide and this entire episode, it is this. It is not that people don't want to help you. It is that you haven't made it clear how somebody can help you. Go back, rewind, listen to that one more time. It is not that people don't want to help you. It is that you haven't made it clear how they can help you. Now think for a second about where you are right now in your career, in your business, in your life. Imagine somebody reaching out to you and they have a similar backstory, similar challenges, and they are facing the same obstacles right now that you perhaps overcame just a few years ago to get where you are today. If this person seems genuine and hardworking and they have good intentions, wouldn't you want to help them succeed, especially if they've done their homework on you and they've made you feel good and feel seen? You would go out of your way to help them. And why? Because they remind you of you at some point in your life. Or you can receive messages like this cold in your LinkedIn inbox instead. Hello, Zach. If you know of anybody looking for an editor or an assistant editor, I am now available. Best. Once again, this is probably somebody with good intentions, but there's only one way that I can help them, giving them a job. Except I don't know anything about this person at all. This is literally a stranger. Why in the world would I consider them for an upcoming opportunity or refer them if I know nothing about them or their past experience? I'd like to help you, but sorry, this one is an instant delete. All right, mistake number five, your questions require a lengthy response or frankly, you are asking too many. Or even worse, you're asking for somebody's time. At this point, you've stopped selling yourself. You've ditched the templates. Your message is short. Your message is concise. You've made it clear who you are, what you want, where you need help. Now it's time for the ask. So here's a message that is super easy to respond to, doesn't ask too many questions, and one can certainly respond to quickly. No? Hi, Zach. Good to e-meet you. Thanks for opening the invitation to connect. Can I buy you coffee sometime and pick your brain? Let me know whatever time works for you. If your first ask forces somebody to open their calendar, you have already lost the game. Yet this message, yeah, it's easy to respond to, but unfortunately, the answer is going to be no, especially if it requires scheduling time in somebody's day that they don't even have for themselves. Furthermore, no matter how brilliant your questions might be or how smart you think they make you look, if your questions aren't easy to answer in a couple of minutes or less, you are once again going to be filed to the someday pile at best and most likely the trash. So here's another quick example of how not to ask questions in your cold outreach. Hi, Zach. I'm just following up and I figured I'd ask you just a few questions. What were some of the things you wish you knew before you got started? What is it about marketing and trailer houses that make it so different and so much more competitive? For someone like me, who's been in the game of being a post PA before and scripted, and I've been out of it for almost a year in retail, what tips would you have for me to find a way to bounce back into this? I've seen on websites for Trailer Park, Tiny Hero, Mob Scene, etc., these contact us sections. After reading a few articles on the subject of cold calling, would you recommend that I reach out by cold emailing or cold calling? You know what? Every single one of these, great question. Each of them is a wonderful topic of conversation over lunch or maybe a meet and greet phone call. And doing a good job of answering every single one of these questions would take me forever. So given all this, let's talk about how to approach your ideal connections. No matter if you want to connect via outreach or in person, no matter which level of your network you're looking to build upon, and no matter whom you are reaching out to next, you can't make your approach until you know the answer to the following question. Who is the hero of the story? Not to wax too philosophically in a pocket guide about networking, but humans have used storytelling as a means to make sense of our reality since the beginning of time. From cave paintings lit by fire to books read by candlelight to the cold, soul-sucking glow of TikTok, we use stories to understand our place in the world. Everyone is on their own hero's journey. And the key to building real relationships and connecting with people on a human level is knowing who the hero of the story is in relation to the person that you want to connect with and why. Now, if you're not sure who the hero of the story is, well, just ask yourself, whose goals are we talking about? And whose obstacles are we talking about? So let's talk about approaching experts. When you are reaching out to an expert, you are the hero of the story. No, really. It is okay to make it about you. As long as, that is, you have provided enough value at the beginning of your approach, and yeah, we're going to get more into this elusive idea of value below, most people are going to be happy to help you, just as long as you've made it clear how they can help you by telling a clear story and having a clear and simple ask. And once again, more on this is coming soon. When reaching out to your experts, the story is about your goals and your obstacles. You are the hero. They are the guide. But what about approaching mentors? Well, as discussed previously, you're not going to reach out to somebody cold and ask them to be your mentor. No, really, promise me, you are never going to do that. Therefore, if done properly, your experts become your mentors. The key to developing this mentor-mentee relationship over time is to continue asking questions that allow this person to help you, then listening to their advice, taking action on their advice, and then reporting your results. This is what I call the cycle of mentorship. So when reaching out to mentors, the story continues to be about your goals and your obstacles. You are the hero. They continue to be your guide. Now let's talk about approaching the gatekeepers. Well, yeah, this is where everybody drops the ball with our outreach. They continue to believe that it's all about them when connecting with the potential gatekeepers. Please consider me for any upcoming opportunities. Here's why this opportunity is a good fit for me. Buy my product or service. I am the best. Time for a harsh but very true reality check. Nobody is going to give you an opportunity or buy your product or service because they care about your hopes and dreams. When you want to connect with the gatekeepers, they are the hero of the story and you are their guide. Now, what about advocates? Well, this is where the hero guide framework gets just a little tricky. In the context of referring you or recommending you, your advocate is neither your expert nor your gatekeeper. They are simply the super connector that's facilitating a warm and hopefully enthusiastic introduction. So who's the hero of the story then? When you're reaching out to an advocate, the hero is the gatekeeper. In order to provide value to the advocate, they must see the value that you bring to the gatekeeper first, value that you must earn. Therefore, the real story is about your gatekeeper's goals and obstacles. And you are potentially their guide. Now let's talk about approaching peers. Now, in the previous four levels, the hero of the story is fairly black and white. When reaching out to peers, however, there are infinite shades of gray in between. The hero of the story depends on the context of your conversation. If you're talking about your goals and your obstacles, well, it's about you. But if in a different context, it's about their goals and their obstacles, well, your peer is the hero of the story. Now, most often in a peer-to-peer relationship, you are both the hero of the story. What brings you together as peers, that's your shared goals and your shared obstacles. Strengthening this kind of relationship is about mutually helping each other achieve both of your goals and overcoming your obstacles together. So given this, now we need to talk about the approach. Once you're clear on who the hero of the story is, time to make your approach. So, what am I supposed to, say? Don't worry, I've got you. To help simplify the process of crafting your approach and help you avoid overthinking it, overthinkers, I see you. I have provided you with a bulletproof formula that, when executed properly, gets a 70%+ response rate, no matter your industry, no matter your craft, and no matter the person that you want to approach. And that formula is VSA, Value, Story, Ask. So let's talk about step one, providing value. Whether initiating an in-person conversation or sending an outreach message, if you're not willing to lead with value and give more than you ask for in return, my approach to networking is not for you. And if you think that it's the takers who ultimately succeed in the networking game, you know what? Hit the pause button, bookmark this essay for later, and instead go read Adam Grant's Give and Take. Now, if you're not willing to do your homework and provide genuine value and appreciation to the person that you want to connect with, this approach also is not for you. And if you're looking for the perfect prompt to have the robots write your outreach for you, these are not the droids you're looking for. But if you're willing to take the time and really put in the effort to handcraft one simple, but not easy, introduction that shows this person how they have impacted you, well, then you're in the right place. Now, regardless of the level that this person belongs on your network, your value-first approach has one simple objective: make this person and their work feel seen. That's it. Providing value is not offering to mow their lawn or walking their dog. It is about reminding them that the work they do means something, that the time and energy that they're spending on this planet matters to somebody. When executed well, the response to your initial approach is most likely going to sound something like this: thank you so much for your kind thoughts and words. You just made my day. Step two, tell your story. Only once you have provided enough authentic value in your opening paragraph have you then earned the right for a busy and maybe even an important person to learn more about your story. And the objective of your story is also simple: make it clear how this person can help you or how you can help them. Your story should contain three components, and how you approach each will depend on who the hero is of the story. By the way, if you skim to this point, do me a favor, go back to the previous section about identifying the hero of the story before proceeding. So let's talk about approaching experts and mentors. When approaching both experts and mentors, you're the hero and the story is as follows: here is where I am now, here is where I am going next, and here is what's stopping me from getting there. When approaching gatekeepers, however, they are the hero and the story is as follows: here is where I am now, relevant to where you are now. Here is where you are or where I think you might be going next. And here's how I can or think that I might be able to help you overcome your obstacles to get there. So what about advocates? Well, when approaching advocates, the gatekeeper is really the hero, remember? It's not them. So the advocate is simply the super connector and the story is as follows: here's where I am now, relevant to where the gatekeeper is now. Here's where the gatekeeper is going next, and here's how I can help the gatekeeper overcome their obstacles to get there. So then finally, what about approaching peers? Well, when approaching peers, the hero will completely depend on the context of the conversation. But the simplest version of the story is: here is where we are now, here's where we are now, here's where we are going next, and here's what is stopping us from getting there and how we can help each other. Now, once you have crafted a clear and compelling story that either makes it clear how this person can help you or how you can help them, that fateful time has come, asking this person for something in return. So let's talk about what to ask so you don't blow it. Now, having coached introverted creatives for over a decade now, I am confident that the fear of asking somebody else for, well, anything, is quite possibly the number one obstacle standing between you and the career, the business, and the life that you hope to build. Everything that you have ever wanted is on the other side of asking for it. Step three, the ask, and this is for when you are the hero. Assuming that you have now provided enough value when you initiated your approach and that you've told a clear enough story that this person understands how they can be helpful to you, it is time to make it clear what you want from them. Wait, hold on a second. Why would this person want to help little old you? Who do you think you are anyways? Well, clearly you're just bothering this very busy and very important person, and no doubt you're just going to come off as needy and desperate, right? Or even worse, you might insult them. Now, given that this is, of course, your one and only shot to share your life story and ask everything from this person that you've ever wanted, well, you're probably better served giving up and just scrolling Instagram instead, loathing your inability to put yourself out there. Why? Well, because you're just not ready yet. And the timing, of course, needs to be better. Now, I'm going to put this as kindly as I can. Stop fucking overthinking it. The simplest way to provide value to somebody is to make them feel useful. Underneath all of the fear and uncertainty surrounding not only our current geopolitical landscape, but also the prospect of artificial intelligence reshaping the workforce and rendering creatives and knowledge workers obsolete, is a much simpler and a much more primal fear. Are we even useful anymore? In our hyper-connected digital hellscape, we feel more disconnected than ever, and we are terrified that we can no longer provide value to this world. By reaching out to somebody that you genuinely admire, your ask gives them the opportunity to make a positive impact and provide use to a fellow human that they can empathize with. This ask-first approach is not just my opinion based on a decade of anecdotal evidence from both my outreach success and the many outreach success stories of my students. This is science. In 1969, the researchers Jecker and Landy discovered the following. People who were asked to do a personal favor for somebody subsequently reported liking that person more than those who were not asked or those who were asked indirectly. And what this demonstrated is that asking somebody for a small favor can strengthen the relationship more than doing something for them. I'm going to say that again. Asking someone for a small favor can strengthen the relationship more than doing something for them. This counterintuitive approach to building relationships was not first discovered in 1969, but instead it dates back hundreds of years to the founding of the United States of America. One of the methods that Benjamin Franklin used to mend fences and build bridges with his political adversaries, not his friends, but his adversaries, was asking to borrow a book from them. That's it. He'd ask them for something, and it gave him the opportunity to not only thank them afterwards, but also it gave them a common interest to discuss. This has become known as the Benjamin Franklin effect. So knowing that you're asking for something is not only acceptable, but it's also providing genuine value. Well, now the question becomes, what do you ask? So here is the key with your ask. You have to make it easy to respond to quickly. Do not ask more than a question or two. Do not ask them for their time. Don't invite them out to coffee to pick their brain, and do not ask them for advice. Wait a second. I can't ask them for advice? Huh. What you are asking them for instead is their story. If you've done a good job in your story section, it should not only be clear how this person can be useful to you, but also how they can empathize with your challenges, if, of course, you've done your homework to find somebody slightly further along on a similar path. And if you really want to make it easy for this person to respond quickly, you don't even ask them a question or two. You ask them to ask. This way, even if they're crazy busy when you approach them, they can respond quickly. And this applies both to outreach and in-person interactions. So when you are the hero, your ask is as simple as, so given how busy you must be, would you mind if I asked you a question or two about how you overcame these obstacles and/or how you achieved these goals? Now, the alternative of this, step three, is the ask when they are the hero. When you're the hero, the ask is by far the hardest part of your approach. But when they're the hero, ooh, the ask is the simplest part, if, of course, you have nailed your story section. Now, assuming that you have made the compelling case for how your skills and experience, your product, and/or your services can help this person achieve their goals and overcome their obstacles, when they are the hero, your ask is as simple as, is this worth discussing further? Which makes it as easy to respond to as yes or no. See, I told you it was simple. But I also understand that there is a giant chasm between simple and easy. And that is why I spend the majority of my waking hours helping creatives just like you devise a clear networking strategy and draft killer outreach that not only gets enthusiastic responses, but also leads to calls, meetings, job interviews, and even dream opportunities. And by the way, if you're interested in taking your outreach and your career to the next level, let's chat. All you got to do is go to zacharnold.com/chat. Literally, Z-A-C-K, zacharnold.com/chat. I'm going to leave you with this. You've got this. No, seriously, you can do this. And if you're stuck right now, if you're procrastinating, if you're overthinking it all, or you're questioning why you should even bother, well, I and the members of the Arnold Academy for Creatives are here to help. And if you want to learn more, go to thearnoldacademy.com. Again, that is thearnoldacademy.com. Yes, your introversion may leave you at a disadvantage if the entirety of your networking strategy is noisy spaces, crowded rooms, and mindless small talk with the sole purpose of dancing around the fact that you desperately need opportunities. But your introversion gives you not only an advantage, but also a distinct edge when networking becomes about building genuine relationships, having deep and meaningful conversations with interesting people, and giving before you ask anything in return. Listen, you were not born bad at networking. You just haven't found a strategy that works for your unique temperament. And in many ways, you were probably made to crush the networking game. You just need to play a different game by different rules. Your rules. I promise that there is somebody that you genuinely admire, but that you are scared to reach out to, who right now, at this moment, they need to be reminded that their work matters and that they are still useful to this world. And I promise that there is somebody genuinely struggling to achieve their goals and overcome their obstacles, and you might just be the solution to their problems. Tell them. And when you hear back from them, and you will, you have my permission to tell me. Thank you for letting me into your inbox, your earbuds, and your heart. All right, one last thing. If after listening today, you are still struggling to strategize your approach, or if you are trapped in an overthinking death spiral of despair, and given how freaking long today's reading was, you are more than welcome to download my Introvert's Pocket Guide to Building Genuine Connections in a Disconnected World, which, in addition to the entirety of today's essay, also includes a sentence-by-sentence VSA formula for sending cold outreach that has a 70% response rate. Not 17, a 70% response rate, as well as a cold outreach before and after teardown that helped one of my students go from crickets to then landing a lunch with an Oscar winner, as well as a step-by-step VSA outreach checklist to ensure that your next message hits all the right spots. If you want to download this guide, simply go to zacharnold.com, Z-A-C-K, zacharnold.com/pocket guide. zacharnold.com/pocket guide. One more time, thank you so much for letting me into your inbox, your earbuds, and your heart.